from the Royal Canadian Hibernaculum, located just 10 miles south of the magnetic North Pole. It's the Ringhausen Brothers Alligator Wrestling Hour. 30 minutes of no-holds-barred discussion about the exciting and dangerous world of professional alligator wrestling. With your host, the eldest of the Ringhausen Brothers, renowned referee, honored herpetologist, retired reptile rodeo clown, and number 7 on People Magazine's list of the 50 sexiest insurance agents of 1992, Peg Leg Greg Ringhausen. Also featuring author, inventor, first banjoist for the New York Philharmonic, and the legal representative for the International Brotherhood of Professional Alligator Wrestlers, and also the eldest of the Ringhausen Brothers, Richard J. Ringhausen. And lastest and leastest, marksman, sculptor, yo-yoist, a man's man who can cook and eat Brussels sprouts, 6-time world welterweight alligator wrestling champion and winner of the silver medal in alligator wrestling at the 1992 Summer Olympics in Barcelona, Spain, the youngest of the Ringhausen Brothers, and the star of your show, Alan Ringhausen. Yay!
Have you,
Greg, you're going to carry the show for a while because Rick and I are eating donuts.
Well,
I saw that.
I brought the bag. It's about empty. We got a couple left. I've been eating on them too. Have you ever gone back to the scene of the crime, Madrid, Spain?
Barcelona.
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 Barcelona. He may have got mixed up. That's why he got the silver.
Barred from the country.
Really? After that? Yeah. Got mad?
He threw a fit because he thought he should have got the gold.
Yeah, I understand that.
That the judging was rigged and all that.
Well, there are a couple from Russia, I think, weren't they?
They said I wasn't a man.
I knew if I gone long enough, there'd be a straight line in there somewhere.
Well, what happened was he thought that they slipped a crocodile in, they got the gold. It wasn't really an alligator.
That intro, Rick, you're 30 minutes from the magnetic North Pole.
Yeah.
And talking about a hibernaculum of alligators. I don't think that's real. You know what a hibernaculum is?
Yeah, do you?
Yeah, I do.
Well?
It's a wintering collection of reptiles that live together in a ball to produce group warmth through the winter months. And while they're in this ball or collective group, they rotate positions to share heat.
Okay, so why can't that be located 15 miles south of the magnetic North Pole?
Because they would not survive.
There would be heat in it. People live up there. They need heat. That's the way this would work. It's like a dome.
And alligators built it?
No, humans built it for alligators.
For alligators.
Because, you know, Eskimos like alligator meat once in a while.
Okay. That's interesting.
Except they don't call them Eskimos anymore.
Okay, that's fine. That's a fine explanation, Rick. I believe you.
All right. As it should be.
Getting deep in here. I thought they just ate whale blubber up there. Keeping warm.
I tell you, I work outdoors quite a bit, and I work clean up landscapes from time to time. And there's a group of workers that go out and do this where they remove vines and invasive species and things like that. And there was a group working the other day, and they were pulling vines out of trees. And one of the workers, as he pulled down the vines, heard a rustling sound, and it turns out that there were bats in the vines. And one of these bats flew up and attached to his face. Oh.
You can't make that up.
And, like, he freaked out.
Well, I would, too.
And
wow.
Yanked the bat off of his face,
man.
And the bat flies away. But now he's got these little tiny scratches on his face and has to go in for the full circuit of
rabies
shots.
Oh, Lord. Isn't that miserable yet?
I'm just picturing having a bat fly over and attach itself to your face.
To your face, man.
That's pretty cool, isn't it?
Freaky, isn't it?
Have you ever heard of that before?
No.
I've never seen. I mean, what type of bats are here?
There's numerous bats that are indigenous.
So he really didn't know which
area.
One it was, but Indiana, they just got to do the
Indiana brown bat.
Probably not the Indiana bat, because the Indiana bat is one of the smallest bats and fairly rare. So I highly doubt that. It was probably the big brown bat or maybe the red bat.
Rick,
we had Indiana brown bats in the church when I went up.
No. There's two different things. You have the Indiana bat or you have the little brown bat.
These were Indiana brown bats. What, just because you say it doesn't mean it's so?
I'm just telling you.
When did we go to start taking classes on stuff?
No kidding.
You know, it's,
okay, you want me to tell my bat story?
I'd love to hear a bat story.
Okay, so I was in the process of trying to acquire a piece of property
that had a line that was 11 acres too long.
No, it was this mitigation deal where a piece of property that had bat habitat on it got destroyed someplace, and so a group wanted to preserve a piece of property that had bat habitat on it that would be suitable for bats.
I like the phrase bat habitat.
And they provide funding to acquire.
Good phrase.
Mm-hmm. Acquire and protect this piece of property. And I was put in charge of this. And so I hired this group that came out and put these bat monitors out. And bats, you know, come out at night, fly around.
Eat mosquitoes. They're very beneficial.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. They'll eat their weight in mosquitoes in a single night. But what I didn't really know, I got an education on bats, is that they make a clicking sound.
I knew that.
That's part of their, you know, sonic flight pattern. You know, they send out echoes and...
Yeah, I've heard that sound.
Yeah. So they have this program that records the clicking sound. And the program, then you come back, you put the chip into your computer, and it'll tell you, you know, roughly the number of bats that are flying through the area on a, you know, nightly basis. And each different species of bat has its own, like, wavelength and signature voice pattern. So they can determine which species of bat, for the most part, is flying through that area. And what I was trying to find was an Indiana bat. But...
Because that's where the money was going to be.
That's where the money... That's what makes it rain, because they're a threatened and endangered species. But the vocalization pattern of the endangered Indiana bat and the common brown bat are so close together that they couldn't verify the existence of a... You know. I said, well, what do you want me to do? Catch one? And they said, that's exactly what you have to do, is catch a bat. And so I...
Do you have a picture of Alan with a big butterfly net?
Well, I got one downstairs if you need it.
Okay, so...
A bat or a butterfly net?
Butterfly net, no bat.
So I hire baseball. A company out of St. Louis, Missouri, that will capture bats. And they use what they're called mist nets. They're this real fine mesh, and the bats don't detect it as they're flying around. And they'll stretch these nets over corridors out in the woods, and then the bats fly into them. And they take the bat out of the net, and they
get tangled.
Yeah, they get tangled in there. And when they would catch the bats, then they would measure them, stretch out their wingspan, measure them. They would weigh them, and an average bat weighs about as much as a dime.
Wow.
They're just tiny. They're smaller than a mouse, really. They're very small. But anyway, I'm heading over to this piece of property where I'm going to meet up with these bat specialists. They're going to put up these nets. And as I'm driving over there, I get this phone call from the United States Fish and Wildlife Service, who regulate the capture and release of bats.
You think you're going to go catch bats without a license,
and,
do you?
No. These people are all licensed to do it. And they said, how are you doing with your project? I said, well, I'm heading over to meet the bat people from such and such company.
Bat people.
And they're like, okay, good.
Batman.
And I said, well, you know, Batgirl. With any luck, you know, we'll catch a bat tonight and let you know. They said, well, it's not just catching a bat. You have to capture a female lactating Indiana bat, put a microchip on it, and track it back to the roost tree.
Wow.
I said,
That's a lot of. That's a little extra that they threw in right at the last second.
I'm like, what?
So when you break the news to these guys, you gotta find a lactating bat.
No, so I, you know, like still so it's lactating.
Do you,
the,
do you like milk it?
I'm driving down the road, and I'm like, are you serious? They said, well, yeah. If you read page 83 of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service catch and release of threatening endangered Indiana bat.
So says Hank Kimball.
You know that. And I said, well.
Well, maybe not.
I must have glossed over that page. So now I hang up with them and I'm driving on over and I get to where.
Cursing the, badly the entire
time. The bat people and I pull up there and you know they're unloading tons of equipment. And I said, well, wait a minute. Did you know that we not only have to catch a bat, but it has to be a female lactating bat, and we have to microchip it and track it back to the roostery? And they said, well, yeah, didn't you read page 83 of the Fish and Wildlife Manual? No. They said, well, yeah, we knew that, and you're doing it anyway. They said, yeah. So, you know, they're... So,
it's not their first rodeo.
So I'm feeling a little better, because they're all pumped and putting up their nets and stuff. And I said, this is really a fascinating job. You're getting to see this threatened and endangered rare species that nobody ever sees. Not only you've seen it,
you're
going to
milk it,
and you measure it and you weigh them. This is a pretty fascinating job. I mean, you guys do this all the time, and they kind of stop and they're looking at each other, and they said, well, we've never actually caught one. And again, my jaw drops open for the second time that day. I said, what do you mean you never caught one? They said, well, most of the work we do is government-related requirements. Even if we're in the city and the government's paying for a new site like this, it has to have a bat monitor.
Survey.
So we never catch any. But this property is wonderful. Everybody wanted to come out. We were the three that got chosen to come out.
Because there might actually be a bat.
Because we think we're going to catch one. And I said, okay, whatever. So I'm out there, helping, because this all happens at night. And so they'll set up like 10 nets, and they'll go back and forth to the nets, because they can't leave a bat in the net for more than 15 minutes.
Cruelty.
According to the manual. And so I'm out there, and they got walkie-talkies, and I'm standing at the control truck. And pretty soon we got one in net number 3. We get down there, and then they ray back, it's a red bat, not an Indiana.
Turn it loose. Release.
Yeah, exactly.
Stomp it.
No, they didn't stomp on any bats. And pretty soon we got one on net number 7. But it's a northern long-eared bat, not what we're looking for. Release it. So this goes on for like an hour or so. They're catching other bats. And finally I said, I got to go to work in the morning because I got to get up and be on the radio. If you catch a bat, you call me no matter what time it is. So I go home, go to sleep, get up. I'm driving to work the next morning. Phone rings. It's them. And they said, we got one.
All right.
We got us a female lactating bat. We've chipped it and released it.
Wow.
I said, awesome.
And it was the first time they ever successfully caught one.
20 minutes later, I get another call. The chip has failed and we've lost the bat.
Oh, man.
So I'm down again. They said, but we're going out again tonight. We feel pretty good. And so I said, well, call me tomorrow if you catch anything. Next day, get up. I'm driving to the station, 5 o'clock in the morning. Phone rings. It's the scientists again. We caught numerous female lactating bats last night, chipped them all, and we're tracking them right now.
Wow.
20 minutes later, we're standing at the roost tree. We found it.
Mama mia, mama mia.
So now... So now, you got a tree full of lactating bats, right?
Yep. So threatened and endangered and lactating.
So I'm assuming you just sent your guy out with a chainsaw and said, cut that tree down.
No. We got to get rid of this brush.
And then say, no bats.
No, I wanted bats. No. So then I called Fish and Wildlife
Service. To get the government money.
Yeah, exactly. I said, man, we have not only do we have beautiful habitat here, we have actually bats living on the property. Boom. Let it rain.
And they are lactating so much, the tree leaks.
We need a cleanup crew now. So anyway, that was my interaction with bats. But they're just, they're tiny little creatures.
And you got to think, the ones who are, they're lactating for their babies. They're mammals, right?
Right. They're back at the roost tree, man.
So how small are the babies?
You can't even see them.
So a little lactate goes a long way.
Hey, Rick, you want to know more about it? Read page 83 of the Catch and Release Manual for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service.
Yeah, how about that? I need a commercial.
Choose one.
I don't care. You pick one.
I get to read.
There you go. Hey, somebody's got to pay for this opportunity.
Today's program is brought to you by Uncle Denno's Pickle Farm. It's pickle season, and over at Uncle Denno's Orchards, the pickle trees are bursting with this year's crop of sweet, delicious pickles. Gherkins, cornicons, sweet dill pickles, we've got them all. And if you want to pick a peck of your very own pickles, Uncle Den has a pick-your-own pickle orchard with dwarf pickle trees for easy pickle picking. We supply the pickle baskets and special pickle ladders so your young ones can have a memorable day out picking pickles. And looking for those special kosher dill pickles? Uncle Denno has that too. Each year, a specially trained Orthodox mohel comes in and snips the ends off of an entire row of young pickles. And it's done entirely in compliance with both Mosaic law and OSHA safety regulations, so you can be assured that no pickles were harmed in the process. So when you've got a tickle for a pickle, come on down to Uncle Den's Pickle Orchard and get to crunchin'.
Okay, so the difference between the Indiana brown bat and the brown bat is generally like the Indiana bat is uniformly dark gray to grayish brown in color and often has a pinkish colored nose. The little brown bat has brown fur. Its ears and nose are often slightly darker, giving the appearance of a faintly contrasting dark mask, a feature that is noticeably lacking in the Indiana bat. So there you go, Rick.
How's about that bat?
So who's your bat specialist that you dealt with? Dr. Zerka?
Dr. Gherkin.
Pickle?
He was a Japanese, Japanese bat specialist.
Could he walk around in the dark and not bump into things?
I don't know that.
Can you?
Yeah.
I'm not a bat specialist.
I can't even walk through I can't walk through my house.
I know,
the
not.
I haven't adopted the ways of the bat.
Yeah, thank God.
Now, I did hire this ornithologist one time.
A what?
An ornithologist, a bird doctor. And I was trying to find a habitat for neotropical migratory songbirds, like the scarlet tanager and the...
Are you sleepy yet, Rick?
And the cerulean warbler.
He just makes this stuff up.
I know, the words coming out of his
mouth.
And
like the indigo bunting.
Syllables.
Anyway, so I hired this guy, and he was going to go out and determine whether these birds existed on this piece of property.
Or in your mind.
And
I
thought...
Like a pickle orchard.
that he was going to go out with some kind of a device that would play bird calls and they would respond. But he went out and just started whistling bird calls, like Wally Cox from the Beverly Hillbillies.
Yeah, when he was the bird watcher.
Yeah, yeah, and that's what this guy was doing. He was amazing. He should have been on Johnny Carson.
That's what I was going for.
Yeah.
Because those kids come out and do that. They had to pick a bird and do it. It was awesome.
It really was. And this guy, he spent too much time in the woods. No doubt.
Now, could you whistle just like him?
Nope.
You didn't pretend to? Like when he would start whistling, you wouldn't kind of go around the corner and just start whistling back at him?
Nope. Oh, hear that? Kentucky warbler.
but the thing is, you don't know what any of these birds sound like. He could be telling you anything, and you'd sit there nodding. Wow, this is pretty good.
Absolutely.
Like that, what was the... the sports event where there was a lady that they hired to do deaf signing that just stood there pretending to sign and didn't even know how to do it. Everyone other than the deaf people who sat there going, well, that's just gibberish.
What is this?
Some of them get a little carried away with it.
You act like you know, like you're talking about, people will buy it.
This is true.
Kind of like that guy in Congress right now?
Yeah, that. Well, almost any of them.
I can't say his name, but I think it's George Santos.
I can't believe he's still there.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
He's holding out.
Hanging in there.
Whatever.
Okay. During the intro, we referenced Mutual of Omaha's Germans of Omaha Wild Kingdom, right? Or wild something or other. Wild Gator Kingdom. The guy, Jim Fowler, wasn't that his name?
Yeah.
The
Jim will do it.
the Jim will do it guy. When Marlon Perkins got too old to go out in the boat and wrestle the alligators, it sent Jim to do that.
But Jim, Marlon continued to narrate.
Exactly. Yeah, Marlon narrated. But Jim actually was an animal expert that had been around for years and years. And he was on an episode of Seinfeld. Did you know that?
No.
There was an episode of Seinfeld where Kramer finds the old set from the Merv Griffin show.
Yep.
And sets it up.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah.
The guy who brings the bird on at the end of
Jim Fowler?
That's Jim Fowler. Yes, it is.
No kidding.
Yeah, it's like one of the last things that he did before he died.
Well, that's cool.
Isn't it?
I probably, because he was big on Johnny
Carson.
This
show that we're doing right now is very much like Kramer's living room show.
It is exactly like it. But the furniture that Kramer had was a lot better than what we got down here. No offense there, Rick.
No, that he had Merv Griffin's set.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Merv Griffin's set.
No, yeah. You got Rick's set.
How lucky would that be?
Had a red couch, didn't it?
Yeah. I think so.
Do you sleep down here too, Rick?
Depends on how things are going.
That's pretty cool, a little room here.
Mostly not.
Got a little refrigerator over there. Very cool. Waste can.
Got a banjo.
Guitar.
Okay, the job of Wild Kingdom. My question is, you know, we all ended up with different career paths, but could you have been Jim? Could you have done that job? They send you out, say, we need a rhinoceros lassoed today.
Okay.
You're going to stand on the front of the bit. You're going to stand on the front of the gym and rope him as we go by.
Let me put it this way. If the replication of the two characters of Marlon Perkins and Jim Fowler were being played by you and I would be the Jim.
Yes, you would.
Yeah, I would unquestionably be the guy driving the Land Rover, ramming it against the side of the rhinoceros,
and I jumped on his back,
and you're gonna stand on the hood and rope it.
What was that John Wayne movie?
Atari.
Atari. Yeah, that's it.
Why did he do that?
Yeah, yeah. They captured animals.
Had a seat on the side of the truck
and stuff like that.
Had a rope around. Had a rope with a rope on it. You didn't see that movie?
No.
Atari?
No.
Wow.
Would stop that?
Wow.
Wow. Is this what it feels like to be you, Greg?
Yes, it does.
Isn't that where the baby elephant walker originally wasn't from that movie? Dun, 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 dun,
dun, dun, dun, dun, dun, Red Buttons
was
on
that. Who's going to do the... Yeah, that was the worst part of the movie.
Yeah, it was.
What was that?
Red Buttons.
He wasn't good in anything.
No. Thought he was.
He was
annoying. Did they like fire bottle rockets and pull a net over a tree full of monkeys?
Yeah.
Okay, well, I might have seen part of that.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah. I thought that wouldn't slip past you.
Can you...
What?
Well, I was watching Amazing Race, and they were over in Italy.
The real life thing or the cartoon?
Huh?
No, that's Around the World in 80 Days.
Yeah, okay. This is Amazing Race. It's kind of a game show on CBS. Couples race around the world.
I'm aware that it exists, but I never...
I've never seen it.
Well, they're in India, and at this temple that they're at, it's just crawling with wild monkeys. I mean, just all over the place. My question is, if you lived in a place like that, could you live in a place where there are just wild monkeys, you know, if you let the window open there in the house? Or would it just creep you out too much?
Am I on an episode of Alone? I'd be eating a lot of monkey meat.
Yeah. It'd be all right, man. Just to get up and have breakfast.
I don't think you can eat monkeys.
Chilled monkey brains.
Yeah, yeah, I know that. But I don't think they allow you to kill and eat the monkeys.
In just in that city, or
I think aren't they protected? You can't just like go out and do a chimp hunt.
I think maybe you could in certain parts of the world.
Well, yeah. I mean, I understand if you're a poacher, but I'm saying, well, no, legally, I don't think you can go out and hunt gorillas or chimps.
I was watching an episode of some nature program, and they were following like these tribes in the Amazon, and they would go out and hunt monkeys and eat them.
Well, yeah, but they have like. They have, like, special grace because they're primitive tribes.
Right. So, what are you asking me? Is no place in the world allowed to hunt monkeys? All monkeys are safe? Or
I'm just saying in a place where there's wild monkeys, you know, like mosquitoes. I mean, instead of mosquitoes, you got monkeys. Could you live in a place like that? Or would you say, no, nah, this is just too much
for no, me? I'm saying it all depends on whether or not I get to eat them.
Oh, well, that's... There was a hunting show on.
Monkey is delicious.
In the 60s.
He's going to live in a little piece of an Indian jungle, and there's going to be a whole circled area around. They're not going to have any monkeys in
Where's
it.
Where's the exotic foods list again?
Yeah, I know. Here we go.
Canned monkey meat.
There was on that, I think. But my question, there was a hunting show back in the late 60s, and I can't remember the name of it. It was on Sunday afternoon, and they started hunting actual wild game. They'd have the guides go in with them, and they'd set up the shot.
Yeah.
And about 5 years later, it went from shooting ammo to shooting photos.
Paintballs or pictures.
Yeah. So I'm just saying, it went in that short of span, it went from, you know, hunting monkey meat to actually shooting photos of these wild animals.
You can't eat a picture, can you?
Nope. Just saying.
It seems to me that if there's monkeys as thick as mosquitoes, as you say,
that
they're not endangered.
That's right.
These monkeys, I saw, they
do a lot of chattering and like jumping all around all the time. I just thought it gave me the creeps. I wouldn't want to be in a place where monkeys might just jump out of a tree and land on
them. I wouldn't want to be in a place where I was sleeping.
I wouldn't want to be in the tree under them.
No, no, or around them. You never know what's going to come in your face during the night.
It ain't monkey meat.
No.
Anyway.
Maybe
you know, there's not many animals that are going to jump on me in a dark room that's not going to cause me concern.
Absolutely.
But what I'm saying is you're talking parts of the world where they've got, you know, a real food shortage issue. And if there's, you know, millions of monkeys, I think we need to start harvesting the monkeys to keep the human population alive.
If there's millions of monkeys anywhere, there's no problem shooting them or eating them for harvesting them.
Well, look at you.
I know. I'd go out there.
You wouldn't even eat a raw egg or raw fish. You're going to eat
a
monkey.
And then you're going to go harvest a monkey.
Cook it. Absolutely. If you're that, like you said, desperate for food, you're not going to eat a monkey. You haven't eaten for 3 or 4 days.
What if it was one of those cute little monkeys that rides around on your shoulder, you know, and has like
a little
fez cap and a vest?
Patch over one eye.
You going to eat that, are you, Greg? God, you're sick.
Oh, man, like you. Jeez. In our little pretend world here, yeah.
He won't eat sushi, but he'll eat a monkey.
Do you think there really were organ grinder guys that ground a little organ with a little monkey?
Absolutely. That's a real thing.
With a can?
That is a real thing, yeah.
And what do you base that on? The cartoons you saw, Bugs Bunny cartoons?
No, I've seen old pictures, you know, vintage photos of the old... yeah, that's a real thing.
And where were these photos taken?
The monkey dancing. New York City, man.
Okay.
I wonder if they probably still have that.
What's that? Can you have a monkey on a chain and
have it beg for
stand on the street corner?
While you play the organ grinder?
Yeah.
And beg for my little cup in his hand?
The ASPCA would be all over you. You can walk a dog around, but you probably can't walk a monkey and make him work like that.
Why not? It's a service animal.
You can get by with that, that's for sure.
This monkey makes me happy.
Absolutely. Got a little.
He makes me money.
Got a little vest on.
What's his service?
Service animal.
He works for me.
Income. He's my market money.
He's an income producer.
Market monkey.
Wow.
Is it that time? It's got to be close to that time.
We're way beyond. I'm done monkeying around.
It's time to get out of here.
I'm tired of monkeying around. Oh.
So when I tag this episode, the ring in which the Ringhausen brothers discuss eating monkeys,
I think that'd be the best way to put it. Or try to eat monkeys.
Yeah. See you later. From Rick Gator.
Greg Gator.
And Uncle Louie.
King Louie.
This has been the Ringhausen Brothers Alligator Wrestling Hour. The Ringhausen Brothers Alligator Wrestler has been brought to you by Uncle Den's Roasters. Tastes just like chicken, but it's not. And by Cannoli's Canine Cough Drops. If your dog is coughing, he's coughing for our cannoli. No portion of today's broadcast may be reproduced without the express written consent of the North American Alligator Wrestling Association. And with that legal in hand, see you later from Greg Gator, Rick Gator, and Alligator. This has been the Ringhausen Brothers Alligator Wrestling Network. Accept no substitutes.